Remember those commercials from the beef industry that tempted us to eat beef? It's what's for dinner? Well, we'll talk with a guest this hour who says eating beef or eating meat of any sort has a big environmental cost. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, July the 7th. And it is not our intention to make you feel guilty on this post-holiday Monday morning after many of us chowed down on those 4th of July hamburgers and hot dogs. But our guest this hour says if you never considered eating meat as an environmental or political issue, it's time to rethink that position. Because he says the livestock industry creates more greenhouse gas than transportation and is a big contributor to global warming. Jim Motivalli is our guest. He is executive editor of New Mass Media Newspapers and the senior editor at E, the environmental magazine, where his article, The Meat of the Matter, appears in the July-August issue. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
And the subtitle of the article is, Our Livestock Industry Creates More Greenhouse Gas Than Transportation Does. How do we know this?
Well, you said that I assert that. Actually, the fact of the matter is that the United Nations asserts that in a recent report. They added up all the impacts of the meat industry, and they come out to more than transportation, which was personally very shocking to me. I would never have guessed that. But when you think that it takes 8 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of meat, and you think of all the feed and the keeping and the electricity that goes into maintaining an environment for beef cows and the transportation involved and the cooking and all that, comparing that to if you were just, say, to have a meal of the grain that they fed to the animals, you begin to see how the impacts add up to more than transportation. But in terms of total global warming output, it's like 17% of global warming is related to the beef industry, or I shouldn't say beef, the livestock industry.
Mm-hmm. And give us a perspective on how big the livestock industry is.
Well, in terms of, you know, just one overall industry, it's probably the largest. You know, when you look at global climate impacts, and obviously it's universal around the globe, and one of the reasons that it's having such a big impact is people are eating more and more beef. The world has emulated the American fast food diet, and you can buy McDonald's hamburgers in China or Russia, and in societies that traditionally ate very little meat, such as in Asia, they're now consuming quite a bit more, and way more of the planet's surface is being used to graze cattle. And that's another impact that I hadn't mentioned when I talked about the different things. The grazing of cattle also has a huge impact in terms of erosion and water pollution.
Mm-hmm. And
even when we do it in what's called factory farming conditions, which means raising livestock in a totally confined system, which is basically the way we do it now, the industry likes to say that it has less impact on the environment because the animals aren't taking up space. But if you just think of the what comes out the other end of all that, all those animals, the waste problem is an enormous issue with confinement systems, and often the waste is held in these big, what they call lagoons, waste lagoons that break apart, and or storms will wash them into rivers. That's why we have enormous amounts of water pollution out in the Midwest.
Yeah,
and why people don't want to be living near like a battery chicken operation, because you end up with both air and water pollution.
Yeah, so you didn't also mention methane gas specifically. Is that a contributor to global warming?
Oh, a very big one. See, even though there's not as much methane produced as there is carbon dioxide, methane is 23 times more powerful as a global warming gas than carbon dioxide is. And believe it or not, those cows, in the gas they produce is something like 10, 15, 20% of all the methane produced. So I have to say, you know, on a positive note, some farms, particularly in Vermont, California, some other states, probably in Wisconsin too, they've started capturing the methane from dairy farms and using it to run, you know, generators and to produce electricity that can go back into the grid. And I've seen this in operation in Vermont. I think it's a really neat operation. I mean, if you're going to raise beef cows, you might as well capture the methane and reuse it, because it's a very powerful and very combustible gas that you can run diesel generators on.
We are talking with the author of an article in E, the Environmental Magazine, this month called The Meat of the Matter, which reveals how our livestock industry and our appetites for meat are contributing a lot to global warming. And we wonder if you care. Does knowing this make you want to rethink your food choices or not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, July the 7th. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. It's known for making us ill, but has also played an important role in the history of biology. After 5, Ben and his guest will discuss the beneficial impact of the bacterium E. coli on science and the biotech industry. So the upside of E. coli coming up after 5 o'clock this afternoon. I guess on a somewhat related topic, we're talking about meat this hour and the livestock industry, and how our guest has discovered that our livestock industry creates more greenhouse gas than transportation, and that it's a big contributor to climate change or global warming. Wondering if you did eat a hot dog or a hamburger over the 4th of July weekend. Are you still listening to this conversation about meat eating and our livestock industry? Do you have a question about this or a reaction? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our guest is Jim Motivalli. He is the executive editor of New Mass Media Newspaper, senior editor at E, the Environmental Magazine, where his article, The Meat of the Matter, appears in the July-August issue. Jim, not to get personal, but did you eat any meat over the weekend?
No.
No, you're not. Are you a vegetarian?
Since 1973.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't either. I'm a vegetarian plus fish recently, but I haven't eaten meat in more than 20 years.
I do eat fish also.
Yeah. My family and friends, though, were chowing down on ribs and other meat things from the cookout this weekend. Should they think twice about eating meat?
Well, I would say that eating meat is a very, very hard habit to break. Mm-hmm. And people who are very green, who call themselves environmentalists, who do a lot of different things to reduce their carbon footprint, still pretty much have the American diet, which is very meat-intensive. And I don't think they think twice about what kind of impact that has on the planet. But if you look at the whole cycle of meat production, it's really very unsustainable. And I personally don't think there's a really easy way to make it sustainable. You know, we can have grass-fed beef, we can have organic beef, and it's a whole lot more pleasant for the animal in terms of its life. But I don't think we could ramp up meat production in an organic way that would produce as much beef as we consume today. The only way to do that would be to take over half the planet for grazing, and I don't think that's too likely, nor is it a very good environmental impact.
Yeah.
The plain fact is that meat production is just not sustainable in 2008, but we're addicted to it.
Yeah, yeah, and you note in the article that most people are meat eaters. Only 4 to 10% of the population self-identifies as being vegetarian.
It was very hard to quantify exactly how many vegetarians there are. The polling data on that varies quite widely, and it sort of depends on who you ask. But another problem is that people tend to describe themselves as vegetarians more than they actually are. Mm. Like, that people will say, I mean, that's sort of their ideal. I mean, as a vegetarian yourself, you probably had the experience of somebody finding out that you're vegetarian and then saying to you, I don't eat much red meat.
Right.
It's like
right.
a perennial line. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they get that line, but you hear it all the time. So if they don't eat a lot of red meat, they tend to think of themselves as vegetarian.
Is the only way to turn this around is to have everyone become a vegetarian then?
In terms of reducing the global warming impact of meat, yeah. And I don't know if we're going to achieve that. We're not. I think we're slowly increasing the number of vegetarians and the percentage of vegetarians in the population, but it's not a it's not a huge flood mm-hmm. enough to slow down the meat juggernaut. I mean, I don't see that happening anytime soon. We're still even among environmentalists, I would say the majority of them are meat eaters. Even among the environmentalists who are concerned about this issue, I could take some of the most prominent environmentalists in the country who've made this an issue, and a lot of them still eat meat too.
Yeah. Well, we'll ask our listeners if they still eat meat and why. But Nick in Prairie Farm is with us first. Hi, Nick. You're on the air.
Good morning. I am a meat eater. I had brats and hamburgers on the 4th of July, but they're right from Wisconsin Whitetail is where I got my meat from. But anyway, I guess my comment is about methane-producing cows and chickens and pigs and whatever else. All it takes is one volcano to nullify all that. You have that volcano in Chile that erupted for 7 days or more, and in the first 12 hours, they said they put in more pollutants and greenhouse gases in the first 12 hours than the world could produce in a year. So if we all become vegetarians, all it takes is one volcano to pretty much nullify all that, what we do.
Yeah, is that right, you think, Jim?
It may be accurate, but it's completely beside the point. Global warming deniers are constantly saying that the bulk of global warming is naturally produced. While that's true, it has no bearing on what we do as a species to reduce our own production of it. We have control over only a small part of global warming production, but it is the part of it that is pushing us over the edge in terms of climate impacts. It's why we have over 300 parts per billion of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, why we're reaching the tipping point. We can't control volcanoes, and we can't control natural background production of carbon dioxide. What we can control is the human output of it. So trying to justify eating meat on the basis of volcanoes erupting is very far-fetched.
Yeah. Nick was saying that he eats venison as his meat, which is not exactly, I guess, our livestock industry. But, Nick, you want to have a follow-up?
I'm not a global warming denier or a climate change denier. I'm sure we have an impact on it. But just looking at a satellite view of that volcano and what it spewed out, if you did not know you're looking at a volcano that was erupting, you would never know that it was there.
Well, you know,
and it was immense. And to say that, a herd of cows, is going to produce that much more methane to have that big of an impact, I think is naive myself.
You're not just talking the methane, though, right, Jim?
No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the whole impact, the holistic impact of meat production, which is a lot more than methane.
Yeah. Nick, thanks very much for the call. Other callers are waiting. Elizabeth in Elkhorn. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
not too bad. I just wanted to point out that I do not think that you have to be vegetarian in order to be a green person. Vegetarianism is not an option for me. I need to eat a certain amount of meat in my diet, but I can get it locally. The steer in my freezer came from a farm 5 miles from my house, and it was butchered another 10 miles away from my house. It's very local. It was mostly pastured. It's probably the greenest beef that I can get around here, but
yeah,
I eat beef, and I enjoy beef.
Yeah, you can, and certainly you can do that, but when you say you need to, you think you can only get protein from the meat, Elizabeth?
I like vegetarian meals, and I eat them sometimes, and I just don't get enough protein from a vegetarian meal. It doesn't fill me up long enough to make it through the day. But if I have meat as part of the meal, then it'll get me through the day.
Yeah, talk some, Jim, about how maybe choosing to buy local meat, whether that makes a big difference or not in terms of the global warming impact.
Oh, it does, and because one of the big impacts is transportation. This is actually an impact with any food production, not just meat, but the average apple, for instance, travels 1,500 miles before it's consumed, and meat may be consumed thousands of miles away from where it was produced. So it's trucked and diesel trucks, which has a big global warming impact, obviously. And if you produce the meat locally and consume it locally, it reduces that impact, but there's plenty of other impact. Once again, if you have beef that's grass-fed, I guess there's not the grain impact. You know, humans could consume the grain instead of consuming the meat. And as I said, it takes 8 pounds of grain to produce a pound of meat. Also, cows are not meant to be grain eaters, which increases their methane production. The fact that it's not a proper diet for them makes them gassier. They make that point. So if you're feeding them on grass and you're grazing them locally, it reduces a lot of those impacts. My point about that earlier was I don't think we have enough land, enough grazing land, to produce meat that way across the country. We could do that when our population was much smaller. But the U.S. happens to be unique among industrialized nations for having a growing population. Much of the rest of the industrialized world is in what they call birth dearth, which means that they have declining populations, most of Europe, for instance. But the United States, the population is exploding. We might have 500 million people, by 2100. So there's no way, and we're paving over farmland every year, huge amounts of it. So we simply do not have enough grazing land to make that local meat production model a national one.
I need to jump in because it's time for National Public Radio News and Wisconsin Public Radio News, and then we'll continue talking about the meat of the matter, about how the livestock industry is warming the planet faster than our cars. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Do you believe there's a connection between global warming and eating meat? We are talking with a guest who has discovered there is. In fact, there's a big connection. His article in E! The Environmental Magazine this month, The Meat of the Matter, tells us how our livestock industry creates more greenhouse gas than transportation. We welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. And we will wonder if you do eat meat and whether this is making you think twice or not. Jim Motovelli is our guest. He is currently the executive editor of New Mass Media Newspapers, senior editor at E! The Environmental Magazine. His article, The Meat of the Matter, appears in the July-August issue of the magazine. Our next caller is Mike in Appleton. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Maybe what I'm going to say right now is not fair because I haven't read your guest article. However, he laid it out pretty clearly what the problem is. But on the other side, I don't know if he's come up with any practical solution. It seems to me that the problem is obviously not going to go away. We're not going to all stop eating meat. One interesting thing that he said was the capture of methane gas. What can we do more to capture more of that methane gas and put it to some use? Now, being that the problem exists and it's not going to go away.
Well, I don't know why the caller is so certain that we will always eat meat. I mean, people were very certain at one time that we would stay using horses instead of cars. And when the first automobiles were introduced, people were in denial that that would ever take over as transportation. Likewise, you know, the first copy machines and the first computers, people thought that would never take over from typewriters, but it did. We could undergo a drastic change in our diet, and then people would think that the vegetarian diet was the more rational and normal one. I mean, that's quite possible. I think that if you just look at what's happening right now with high oil prices, cheap meat is dependent on cheap oil. You're not going to have one without the other. The fact that we can run our slaughterhouses and our trucks and our confinement meat systems on cheap oil is what has kept the price of meat down. The fact that meat was very expensive in Asia is why there was very little meat in the Asian diet, or even why there wasn't a whole lot of meat in our ancestors' diets here in the United States. It was expensive. I think we're going to go back to that because meat is an unsustainable industry in a high oil price economy, and that's what we're entering in now. One of the things we've seen is rapidly rising food prices as a result of high oil prices. You see that first in the price of corn, partly because corn is also used to make ethanol, particularly in the Midwest. Corn prices have gone up really, really dramatically. And I think we're going to see meat prices soaring. And the same way, you could probably ask a majority of people a few years ago whether they'd ever give up their SUVs, and they'd say no. You know, that's part of the basic American lifestyle. So that caller, your caller there, has the basic assumption that people will never give up meat. And many people had the assumption they would never give up SUVs. And I think we're seeing a dramatic shift away from SUVs right now because of high oil prices. Those same oil prices will deeply affect the meat industry and the cost of meat. And I don't think the amount of meat currently in the American diet is going to continue for this and other reasons.
Yeah, you mentioned in our first half hour that some communities, farming communities, are capturing this methane gas and using it to power their farms. Is that, if every farm did that, would that have much of an impact?
I don't think it would have a huge impact, no. I think it's worth doing. For one thing, as I said, methane is 23 times more powerful than carbon dioxide as a global warming aggravator. So capturing it and keeping it out of the atmosphere is a really good thing to do for the planet. So it's very, very positive in that regard. It's not a huge money maker for the farm. It doesn't make the farm enormously more financially viable or anything. I mean, it's a nice little thing. I wouldn't say it's going to change the farm economy.
So besides people not giving up meat and the livestock industry shrinking in size, is there any other way for the livestock industry to reduce its global warming hoofprint?
I think what we would probably need to go back to, and I think in many ways we're likely to do this, we're going to go back to a somewhat earlier model where meat is produced and consumed locally, and it's a much smaller part of the diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's about the only way you could make it. And even then, it's not going to be particularly sustainable because we simply don't have the grazing land necessary to raise large quantities of beef.
Yeah, Mike, did you have anything to add or ask?
Yeah, well, you know, I your guest is absolutely right. But, you know, in the short term, I just wonder if there's anything else that we can do, like the capture of methane gas, or perhaps come up with, it seems to me that there was a substitute for meat which was based on soy. Is that an avenue?
Oh, there are many very good meat substitutes, and I eat them all the time. Tofu. Have you ever heard of tofurkey?
A lot of people
eat that on Thanksgiving instead of turkey. And seitan is another meat substitute. And some of these are amazingly convincing. For instance, I think a lot of people are familiar with veggie burgers and sometimes order them even though they're not vegetarian because they hear that they're healthier for them. I might also add that I think you're having a program on the impact of E. coli, some of the beneficial aspects of E. coli.
Yes, later today,
E. coli contamination of fast food hamburgers has been a major issue.
Yeah, it sure has.
And there were major outbreaks of E. coli that resulted in the deaths of many children.
Yeah, of course.
That's one reason you can't get a rare hamburger in a fast food restaurant today. But E. coli is a huge problem in meat, and one of the reasons it's a problem is of the way we produce meat. Our slaughterhouse industry has got many avenues for E. coli to enter the meat supply, and a huge percentage of it is actually contaminated, and cooking the meat will kill the E. coli, and that's why we don't have large outbreaks of it, but in terms of actual contamination, it's a very big problem.
Yeah, of course. We also have salmonella in produce, maybe tomatoes, but that's another hour. In fact, it's an hour we're going to be spending tomorrow at this time talking with someone who is upset with the FDA and how it's handling this outbreak of salmonella in produce.
And salmonella is also a big problem in poultry, as well as other things like Campylobacter, and there's a number of poultry diseases that will come from inadequately cooked poultry or eggs.
Yeah, and when we're talking about the global warming impact of livestock, are we including poultry in that?
I don't think poultry is considered livestock.
Right. I mean, in terms of eating meat, though, we're not considering people who eat poultry as being big contributors to climate change.
Oh, they are. Yeah. They are still. Because poultry is another not particularly sustainable industry, and I think the way we produce poultry is very bad overall.
Yeah, and how so?
Well, we produce chickens in huge factory farming operations where you have something like 100,000 chickens in one room, and the impact, I mean, the chicken's life is pretty short and miserable. They're standing on many cases on wire, which deforms their feet. They have an area the size of a album cover to live in.
Yeah.
Because of stress caused by these conditions, they peck each other, and they're consequently debeaked.
Right.
So
and
that's certainly subject to many, many diseases this way.
Yeah.
And their waste is an enormous problem. As I said, it's collected in waste lagoons, and these will wash routinely into rivers and streams and cause a lot of pollution in the Midwest, probably in Wisconsin, too.
Yeah. Does that, though, all contribute to climate change?
Yeah, I would say that, their methane production, they're trucking the chickens around, trucking the meat around, all that has global warming production. It's not really part of that statistic I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's the United Nations study. It came out in 2006. It's called Livestock's Long Shadow, and it's a comprehensive look at the impact of the meat industry.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I would say, which I find very curious, and I looked at this in the article, even in that report, Livestock's Long Shadow, they don't really come up with vegetarianism as an option. They just talk about various ways that the meat industry could reduce its greenhouse gas production, but they don't really put on the table the idea of not eating meat, and it's very hard for people to even put that on the table.
Well, it's on the table right now, and we'll continue talking about it with our guest. His article, "The Meat of the Matter," appears in the July-August issue of the Environmental Magazine, 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number, if you want to weigh in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Monday, July the 7th. Coming up, what state politicians might be lost under an Obama or McCain administration? We'll look into the political crystal ball coming up in our state capitol report after 7 o'clock. Plus, we will explore the upcoming political races in Wisconsin and the battle over control of the state legislature. That's coming up in our next hour. Right now, we're talking with the author of an article in E, the environmental magazine this month, called The Meat of the Matter. It talks about how our livestock industry and our appetites for meat are contributing to global warming. Our guest is Jim Motovalli. He is currently the executive editor of New Mass Media Newspapers and senior editor at E, the environmental magazine. And our next caller, Rachel in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to give you a complete thumbs up on what you're talking about. I've been a vegan for 10 years, and the number one question I get asked as soon as I tell everybody I'm a vegan is, you're not dead yet, mm-hmm. and how do you get your protein? So yeah, I'm totally right on. You're totally right on the money for what you're saying. And I also wanted to add, I don't think you've addressed the water issue. I know that's probably not what you're talking about, but the water issue of how much water goes into the production of meat is just huge.
That's true too. That's a very good point.
So yeah, and I've read a lot of, and I read E magazine, and I read a lot of the stuff on meat eating and global warming and stuff like that. If you ever read Slaughterhouse, I don't know if you ever read the book Slaughterhouse, that'll
Gail
turn anybody Eisnitz, to a vegan.
Gail Eisnitz, that's a very good book, Slaughterhouse. Yeah, that'll show you how the modern meat production system works.
Yeah, Rachel, you decided to become a vegan for animal welfare reasons, though, or was it a combination of things?
Well, first it was, first I have to admit it was kind of selfish. It was I was scared of all the stuff that was going around in the meat, and so we were afraid of our health. So we stopped eating beef at first because of all the mad cow we'd heard about.
Mm-hmm.
But then it just kind of went from there. We started to research and we started to realize, oh my gosh, all this stuff goes on, and look what happens with the animals, and look what happens with the environment. And one of my favorite sayings, I guess, is you can't be an environmentalist and a meat eater too. So, and I think that's totally true.
Why do you think it is, Jim, that you know, so few people have made the jump as Rachel did?
I think if there's anything we're addicted to, you know, in addition to SUVs, it is eating meat. People find it very, very hard to give up. I would never say that meat doesn't taste good, or it's not a very quick and easy source of protein, or it's not an ingrained part of the American diet. I'm certainly not saying those things. I'm not saying it's easy to give up meat. I'm just saying these are the facts in terms of global warming production. So if you want to really consider yourself an environmentalist, you have to look at this, since it is, according to the United Nations, more than transportation in terms of its global warming impact.
Thanks, Rachel, for the call. George in Rubicon is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for taking my call, and good morning to your guest. Jim, I'm a third-generation Wisconsin dairy farmer, and of course I couldn't disagree with you more. I would highly question your United Nations figures. I would suggest that you look at some figures from the United States Environmental Protection Agency put out in 2006, in which they state that agriculture only contributes 6.4% of the total greenhouse gases in this country. Now, granted, methane is a portion of that, but of all the greenhouse gases from agriculture, according to EPA, methane is only 7.4%. I would also like to point out that the livestock industry, contrary to what you said before, does contribute significantly to soil conservation, because in order to grow livestock, we have to give them forages, and forages are rotated with row crops, which holds the soil in place, and for which livestock are designed to eat, because they're ruminants. If you're concerned about methane, then you would, production from animals, then you'd have to talk about eliminating all the herds of wildebeest and hartebeest in Africa and all the ruminant animals around the world, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon. So that's my comment. Thank you.
And your comment, Jim.
Well, I don't think you can compare the flocks of wildebeest around the world with the number of cows we have. I mean, the cows are hugely more of an impact. There's very few of those wild ruminants that he's talking about on the planet anymore, and less every year. The biggest impact is from domestic animals, from animals we're raising for food by far. And he may have an EPA report that says that. I'm saying what it says in the UN's report. They're not the same thing. He's talking about U.S. global warming impacts, and the UN report is global impacts. But I would suggest that the EPA is not looking at the whole cycle of meat production in coming up with those figures.
Bill in Kakana is with us now. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. I wanted to ask the guest about, and I'm all for reducing emissions and helping out the environment, but switching to a vegetarian diet is going to be lacking in omega-3s, which are critical for our development. And also, soy has some pretty bad side effects, especially for men with the estrogen-like producers. And so I wanted to see if you could comment on that. And also adding into the mix, when for our family, when we buy our beef, we do buy local organic grass-fed beef, so it's higher in omega-3s. We're willing to pay more for that. And just like the caller, or excuse me, the guest mentioned that people said they would never pay for gas at this price. Well, when they have to, they do. And so does it become more sustainable if people are willing to pay more for a better product?
Well, I think with we're talking about local beef production and consumption, I don't think just being able to pay more for it really solves the problem. The problem more is available land. As the U.S. population grows and we take over more land for subdivisions and we take productive farmland out of production, we simply don't have the space we used to raise animals. That's why we shifted to a whole confinement-type system for meat production. Most cows are raised not grazing on farmland, but in very close confinement systems where they're fed basically grain, and their waste is channeled into waste lagoons that end up polluting rivers and streams. And it's the only way to possibly do it when you're having land challenges. It's why we put people in apartment buildings instead of in suburban houses. It uses up less land. And the industry justifies that type of system based on the fact that it doesn't impact the land as much. But it's very hard to say, okay, we're going to switch back to a local beef production. We're going to put our cows out to graze on farmland when that farmland simply doesn't exist, and we're continuing to take it out of production every year to create new housing for a growing population.
We're running short on time. Jim, you're not necessarily a nutritionist, but you can get omega-3s in walnuts and supplements and fish, and you don't have to eat meat, right?
Well, there are many, if you go online, you can find many answers to that question of, is there a way to get protein from a non-meat diet, and there's definitely many, many ways of
you're right. He was talking about omega-3s, too. But let's go to Patrick and Mequon. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I grew up in Wisconsin eating tons of meat, and you know, I heard a lot of people talking about the fact that they, you know, they just can't stop, or they need meat, or they have a desire to eat meat. I lived abroad for 16 years in China, as a matter of fact, and just meat is such a small part of the diet there that I'm just forced to eat other foods. The good news was is that the Chinese food is really good, and you don't really need much meat, if any, to make food taste good. And I guess the light at the end of the tunnel is that not eating meat is not really a big deal for a Wisconsin meat eater, it turns out. It's really easy to stop eating it, and I'd say less than 5% of my diet is meat, then no
Patrick,
big deal.
Thank you so much. We have less than a minute, Jim, for a final reaction or comment.
Well, yes. One of the reasons that we're consuming more meat today is people like the Chinese have adopted the American fast food diet to some extent, and there is more meat in the Chinese diet than there was 20 or 30 years ago. Chinese people are growing larger and more American-like every year, and I think just as the growth of oil consumption is not sustainable, the growth of meat production is not sustainable either.
And we'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jim Motovalli is the author of the article, The Meat of the Matter, that appears in the July-August issue of E! The Environmental Magazine. We thank Carmen Jackson, Karen Prager, and Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour. We thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.